made no attempt to educate themselves, live in a kind of dissolving phantasmagoria of a world. That is, they completely forget what happened last Tuesday.
Freedom in a vacuum. The last Sunday of each month at 11 p.m. CKLN FM 88.1 in Toronto, and it's a minute or two after 12 o'clock. And this is the week, of course, of the Church of the Subgenius, and with some difficulty, we reach Bob. Hello, Bob, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, Mike, I can.
How are you doing?
Fine, fine. Many stressful events here, but they're all in order and necessary for my job that I have to do.
Well, last week you called, we didn't go on the air, but you told me about the death of Mae Brussel. Did you want to elaborate a little bit tonight about that?
Yes, Mae Brussel died October 3rd, that was last Monday, at 22. Notice the 22 in there, 22 in the afternoon California time, just 20 to 5 your time. And the funeral was on Friday, just a minute, there's Mike.
Okay.
Why? I'm being directed here, Mike. The director has told me to put it closer to my mouth. No, why? Mike, do you see any advantage to that?
Well, you are sounding a little clearer, Bob, yeah.
Right now. I see. The director is right that I should have it closer to my mouth. All right.
The director knows what it's all about.
Okay. So the funeral was on Friday, the 7th, October 7th, at noon hour, and there were about 200 people there, many from intelligence agencies around the world, and many what are called Brussels sprouts, people who have taken Mae Brussel tapes for years, many local media people, and many longtime friends, from children to grandmothers of Mae Brussel. And the funeral was quite touching, the celebration, because her daughters, she had two daughters and two sons. Her fifth daughter died in 1970 in a car crash, which was always a suspicious incident. But her present daughters asked people to just speak up and talk about what they wanted to say, and what they thought Mae meant to them. So this was videotaped, and the celebration went on for 2.5 hours. So the stories that people told very interesting. It was a gravesite celebration, so there was no rabbi there, Mae being Jewish. There was no regular synagogue ritual, but the effort to have a dialogue among the funeral attendants and with Mae Brussel's spirit was a great success, in the sense that because they got it on videotape, many things were said, and it's a record for all time, and many stories came out of the unique things that Mae Brussel had done.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a reception at her home after, and the stories would cheer poured out. So that was October 7th. I'm now down in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
Working with other holy offices.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
I think that's all I'll say. Do you have a question?
Did you get a chance to say anything at the funeral yourself?
No. I decided that if I spoke, maybe my true role would come out. And so I played it low key, because many people did not know that Bob Dobbs was in their midst.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been asking, Bob, how old was Mae?
Beg your pardon?
How old was Mae?
She was 66. Mm. She was born in 1922. She was born on John F. Kennedy's birthday, May 29th. Also John Hinckley's birthday, May 29th. But what I did there, this Bob Dobbs, is a week had worked on moving the books out and moving the filing cabinets out. There were 38 filing cabinets, four drawers each. Incredible amount of files, 5,000 books. And an interesting point that happened was there was a house up the street for May that May always claimed was a house that kept her under surveillance. It was never clear who lived there. And there was always this activity coming and going there, and she always complained about that house was used for surveillance of her activities. They probably wanted to see who her informers were. Well, in the week before Mae Brussels died, there was a lot of activity going on in her house, but also there was increased activity at that house up the street. Trucks coming and going, and more activity than usual. Well, a night and a half, or we could say 2 days before Mae Brussels died, that house burnt down. All right?
You kidding?
Can you hear me, Mike?
Yeah.
And that house was torched. The article in the paper the next day said it could not determine who the owner of the house was. There was no registered owner. And so that kind of confirmed May's suspicions about the house, that they had to torch the house because they had to get rid of all evidence and all equipment that was used to surveil May all those years.
Mm-hmm.
So that created a dramatic atmosphere. And also there is much evidence around the scene before May died that indicated that May Brussels may have been murdered. Now this is being investigated by some of our close researchers, and of course I'll be helping there. But we would be very surprised to know who did it. The person who is suspected is a public personality making much headway right now in the media. That person attended the funeral, and that person is being suspected.
That was my next question, Bob. I mean, a lot of people automatically question me as to, you know, her death and whether it was natural causes or whether there was something behind it that was unnatural.
Well, what happened is she had her surgery on June 23rd. She got home July 7th. She was very active and healthy and quite positive that she'd licked it for about 3 weeks. And then there was a short notice published in the newspapers in August, I think it was, a put-down in one of the major San Francisco papers. A strange notice that spit on May, so to speak. And it may have affected her, maybe, psychologically, but she took a nosedive shortly after that and never recovered and went into a coma. And the family was very upset at the lack of communication around the situation. Connie did some good work helping the family in the last days, helping them to deal with the stress of seeing their mother die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Mike Hansen paid tribute to May on his show this Monday, and I announced it to...
He did?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He played some recordings he had made of the tapes when we had run them, and played some music, and just did a half-hour spot.
Well, that's great. Thank Mike for me for doing that.
Yeah, I did.
While we're talking about May, I want to give out an address. This is important. The May Brussels Research Center has been set up because, of course, our files have to be organized and passed on to the next generation, and there has to be a serious effort to prepare them to be preserved. So several people were involved the weeks or so before finding a place in Santa Cruz, which is near where May lives in Carmel, finding a place that would be kept top secret for a while in case there was anybody who was going to try to destroy the files. But at this point, the address I'd like to give for people to donate to the May Brussels Research Center, and they can trust me that checks won't be misused, or even if they want to just send their condolences. The address I give is write to John P. Judge, J-U-D-G-E, that's John P. Judge, P.O. Box 8431, that's P.O. Box 8431, Santa Cruz, C-R-U-Z, Santa Cruz, California, zip code 95061, 95061. Any donations will go to paying the rent for this building and for creating the facilities that eventually will make this available to the public, you know, in terms of copies, microfilm, and any access that a person who's a real researcher needs to use Nebrasco's files. So this is a serious effort, and a lot of people have donated money already, and very commendable and intelligent sub-geniuses are working around that project.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about May? Because I'd like to move on to what you're doing now. And...
All right. I would just say that many people said, and it was interesting to hear it from people of small walks of society, that May Brussel was the greatest historian in the 20th century, the greatest American historian, which is quite a claim for a person, for someone who isn't in academia. And many people, including people in the intelligence agencies, were saying that her work is the greatest record of history in the 20th century for American realities that's ever been done up to this point. That's quite a claim. Some people said she was the greatest woman alive today. Now, you think of the different responses through the years through her tapes, right, Mike? You know, the mocking, the confusion, the sincere understanding of it, all the different levels, which makes me feel that May Brussel was such a force that she would have this whole range of reactions from thinking she's off the wall nut to the greatest historian of our time. And knowledge would do that to people. Knowledge would have such a power.
And they create extremes, don't they?
Yeah, and reality is extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of the extremes within our known reality. Then knowledge would mime those extremes. And the more accurate knowledge is in miming reality, it would paraphrase those extremes. And that's what May Brussel did. So, you know, it was... One thing is that Connie and I did see May die. That was a coincidence. But we showed up on the morning that she died, and she was in very bad shape. We left and got some stuff for the children, and we came back, and she died. So that was pretty intense for us. But I would say that seeing someone who was so alive so dead is an experience that, you know, one would never forget.
Yeah.
And also appropriate. I've had extremes like that in other parts of my life, but to see someone so alive like May Brussel, and then to see the person no longer with us is something that could be beyond words. I don't know. Have I said enough words on that?
Well, I'm encouraged by the this address you've given. I've jotted it down. So if people want more information, I can pass it on tonight.
You've jotted down what?
The address.
Oh, great. So you'll be able to give that again.
Yeah.
So I felt that May was going to die before we went out. I didn't know if she'd die by the time we got there, but it worked out that way. And I'm just happy to have been able to help the research center get organized.
Mm-hmm.
So May Brussel was the Holy Office, and the Holy Office will be continuing. Now, I'm down here in L.A. Trying to make communication with the Frank Zappa Holy Office, and I'm also involved with the Cosmic Awareness Holy Office. I'm making a videotape with David Booster, probably the best medium for cosmic awareness, which will set down the work he's done in remaining incommunicado and incognito for the last 20 years and making movements in history, making appropriate dramatic responses to the events around him so that he would not be too visible and end up being a target. His aim was to stay away from the state of being a target, yet make some momentous shifts and changes and adjustments that were needed. If you recall, he was the one who said that he had four moves on his chessboard. And what would cost him $10 would cost the United States, France, Germany, and Britain $40 million. He's the one who, after that statement, channeled the destruction of Challenger space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
You there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. He's the one who was, because the force was coming at him, he just deflected it back. It's not that he was intending to blow up the space shuttle, but that was the instrument of those Western military powers that was destroyed because the force was coming at him. So he's done many things along those lines, so very involved in getting it down on record. Videotape the history of his work.
What's your role, Bob, in this videotape?
Beg your pardon?
What's your role in this videotape?
What's my role?
Yeah.
Say that again.
What's your role in this tape?
You're saying the role?
What is your role?
Yeah, what? You're asking what his role is?
Yours.
No, say it clearer, Mike.
I'm saying it as clear as I can.
Okay, say the sentence again. You're asking me about my role?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, my role is I'm going to interview and facilitate Dave Worster's explanation of his last 20 years of work because I'm the only one who understood and followed it for 20 years. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yep.
You're not disconnected.
Can you hear me? Are you having problems hearing me?
See, Mike, I'm not hearing you, so are you disconnected?
Can you hear me now?
I heard you just then.
I don't think this is working very well.
I heard you just then. Well, it's working right now, then.
It's very erratic, though.
All right, so I'll understand why you're not breaking, why you don't come in. So my role is to facilitate the interview with David Worster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm staying at one of the office workers. We call him the office manager, Frank Zappa. A man who is slowly turning into a sub-genius just in my presence. And he has offered incredible environments for us to work in and save a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You see, as Bob Dobbs, I have to go undercover here and I have to act like a citizen, generally because I'm operating on a pedestrian level, not on electric air. So, on a simple cover like I'm doing, I need people like Jerry to facilitate our efforts to dramatize the events over the next 3 weeks until the election. You know, the October events of 1980 have been in the media a lot. An ex-CIA man has revealed that George Bush was in Paris with representatives of the Ayatollah Khomeini. That was in the papers last week. George Bush was involved in setting up a release of the hostages after President Reagan was put in 1981. These events are coming out, but they don't seem to be having any effect on the polls. So I've had to, and will over the next few weeks, pop through the holy offices. I'll be going to see Dr. Beter. Dr. Beter's widow next week. I will be moving along, touching on all these bases, Sherman Skolnick, we already did, and activating as much possibilities and resonance so that what needs to be done by the election can be realized. You follow?
I follow, Bob. I follow. Listen, Bob, I have a question for you.
All right.
Wasn't it in Los Angeles that J.R. Bob Dobbs was supposedly assassinated?
No, that was in San Francisco on January 21st, 1984.
Okay, so it was San Francisco then.
Yes. One of the actions that I have to take in over the next few weeks is I do have to go to Dallas, Texas, and confront Reverend Ivan Stang in person.
Mm-hmm.
This is a drastic move I need to do. Create this resonance, this opening of chakra energy in the American body politic. I have to do this to confront him personally. And Reverend Stang knows his destiny, knows that I'll be doing this, and I'll be seeing him the last week of October. You know, Mike, you weren't there several weeks ago when he showed up in Toronto 2 days after I left and appeared on CTV. And it was the day that he arrived that Ben Johnson was screwed and lost his gold medal. So Sang moved into Toronto the day I was gone. And so I have, because of the effects on the Canadian psyche of that event, I had to go confront him personally.
So, is it just going to be just you and Stang, or you mentioned Connie's going to be there?
Yeah, it'll be Connie and me and Stang and his family.
Mm-hmm.
He will have his wife there too.
Is it apt to get messy, Bob?
What?
Is it apt to get messy down there?
It may have to, because he does have certain powers as a result of ripping off my archives and using my knowledge. He now is doing very good with the book My Weirdness by Mail. He does 2 radio shows a day, 2 interviews a day, and he is almost able to quit his job as film editor. He now is devoting his time totally to being a professional writer. So the pink forces are beginning to prop him up as an ongoing financial entity.
Of course, we confronted him on the phone once, but that didn't solve very much.
No, I think that's why, because I won that confrontation, I think that's why his profile in money terms has increased, because more backing has moved in to prop him up since that event, and they hurried out the second book, High Weirdness by Mail, and this allowed the energies around me to be distracted, and resulting in such problems as the death of Mae Brussels. And there are other entities that are in trouble now, too. So this is the problem with giving someone like Reverend Ivan Stang the power to distort the efforts I make as chairman of the Secret Council of Ten. And I've never had to deal with him in person since 1982. I've never had to correct him. But it's such a dangerous situation now with the death of Mae Brussels that I have to go and deal with him personally. So there may be a lot of thread-like matter being dispersed over the Dallas area.
Yeah. Well, Bob, when will this be again? This will be next week?
I will visit Stang on the latter part of the last week of October.
So will you be in touch with us then as to how things go down in Dallas?
Yes, I don't know. I may. Depends on whether I can release the details of what happened. Mike, that I can't go into until after November, because so many of the cards are in position and so many of the players are in position that any false move at this critical time could set off the induction of slack.
Well, I fully understand that, and I know the 3 million listeners understand that as well, Bob, so don't worry about it. It's all right.
All right. You notice that I'm being quite sober tonight. Not being my usual excited self, but it's because when someone is removed around me, then I have to concentrate my energies on that level for an extended period of time. See what I mean?
Yes, I understand, Bob.
Now, why don't we, if you want to take a break, or let's ask them, I'm sure I haven't been in that area for a month now almost. Why don't we take some calls or some questions?
Okay, I'm not really sure how we should do this, though.
We have them call 595-1478, and you take that phone and take the question, relay the question to me, and I can answer it. We did this a couple of weeks ago with Ken Perry, and it worked quite efficiently.
Okay, yeah, I'm just worried that your connection's not very good or this machine isn't working very well. We can try.
All you have to do is just give out the number and see if we get any calls and any questions that are needed to be answered right now. 595-1478.
Okay, well, we can do that. While we're waiting to see if anyone calls, I just wanted to ask you about the climate down there with regards to the American election and how things are in California specifically.
Well, I noticed that in on the radio stations here, especially in the community stations and those stations that aren't involved with big bucks, that they have many imitators of my kind of show. They have many people doing humor, cynicism-based kinds of comments on the news of the day. Now, what's interesting is that these people are very humorous. Some of them are professionals, but they do not have a program. They do not have a doctrine, a way of articulating a purposeful message that I do. In other words, some of these shows, they have people call in, they have to use code names, they make fun and make beautiful mosaic images of the events on the news, but it is all covered up in a marshmallow zone of humor. In other words, I can be humorous sometimes, but the thing is, to always remain in that womb of humor and womb of cynicism results in that work being just a specialist product. In other words, these people make fun of the political issues of the day and actually provide some very good insights. Jokes do provide insights, but they leave the listener without a purpose. All they do is maybe urge the listeners to vote for one candidate or another. But there is no comprehensive program. And I think, Mike, you can feel proud that you have me on your show because I do offer a comprehensive program of enhancing perception of what things to do and how to relate to the effects of what one does. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, Bob, you know I praise you every night and every morning. There's, no need for reassurance.
All right.
Bob, we do have a caller. Why don't I just reach over and talk to the caller, and then I'll relay the question to you.
Great.
Just a sec. Hello, caller. Hi. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. I can pass it on, caller. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can pass that on to him. Hang on to the line, and is this a two-parter? All right. Okay, go ahead. Okay, yeah. Listen to your radio, and you'll hear Bob speak. Okay, beautiful. All right, thanks. Okay, Bob, we've got two questions, all right?
Okay.
Okay, the first question, Bob, was this listener wants to know why you allowed the space shuttle to go off successfully.
Because it is fully under the control of the Russian government. We know that the Skopje Christian faction in Russia that inherited the victory of the Battle of the Harvest Moon, and therefore through, and that happened in 1977, that following that, they made all attempts to make American space shuttle missions a failure. They were all failures, but not none of them so public as the one in 1986, which put a damper on the American Bolshevik Pentagon space shuttle program from 1986 on. And it was after that that the Fed conjugated all the changes reflected in the American media leading up to now. Now, Gorbachev works with me in the solar government because when the Exodus landed early this year, they had made an offer previously to the landing to both both the Pentagon and to Gorbachev, that the group that would implement their program, the Exodus program, which would be necessarily done through me, the group that would respond most harmoniously to that would be given the equipment to dominate the solar government. All the Russians accepted it. The Pentagon didn't. Gorbachev works with me now. We run the solar government. Over the last 2 years, it's been negotiated behind the scenes. And now that, as you know, the summit meeting in May 1988, when Reagan went to Moscow, many things were signed and coordinated then. That was basically the capitulation of the Pentagon to Gorbachev's solar government, which is a branch office of my secret council of 10. As a result of those agreements in May, the space shuttle program in the United States was allowed to go ahead because it is under the dominance of Gorbachev, which is an extension of my authority, which is in harmonious relationship with the Axis. And that is why the Americans are now talking up a Mars-Moon colonization program, because the country and the space program in the United States is basically controlled by the secret Stasi group in Russia. All right?
Okay, I can only assume our listener is satisfied. He's at home listening now.
If he wants to supplement another question, go ahead.
Okay, well, he did have another question, although I've forgotten it. Perhaps I can paraphrase it. The question had to do with Gary Hart, and I guess, is there some sort of convention happening with Gary in Colorado?
No, but Gary Hart is appearing on panels again. You see, Gary Hart left the convention in a huff, the Democratic convention, the last summer. He expected certain things to be given to him, and they were planned before, but many adjustments were made in the spring after I had predicted that Gary Hart would be president. Many crises and traumas that led up to the May 1988 agreement that made it unnecessary for Gary Hart to become president. He himself, being a pink, did not understand this and walked out of the convention last summer. He has now returned to public life after having a personal tantrum, and I've seen him speak several times on the media here in the United States over the last 2 weeks. Gary Hart expects some activity to swell up around him in 1992, but I think by then there probably won't even be any elections.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well...
Another thing is that George Bush will win the election here in the United States, and if he doesn't win, then you know something grossly unpredictable has happened. But I can assure you George Bush is going to win. And the symbology of Mae Brussels dying a month before he, or 2 months before almost, before he becomes president, will show the American people that they'll wish that they had left with Mae to move to the other domains, because what they're going to bring into the United States, this whack, blackless situation, the pain that will come to the United States and Canada will be only something that sub geniuses with their foot glands are prepared to assimilate in a fake ear kind of way. You know, fake ears are those that can sit on nails. You're going to have to be a fake ear to get through the 90s in North America. Now, it's interesting that you notice that Mulroney didn't call the election a couple of weeks ago, but he called the election when it was clear that Bush would win. In other words, if Bush wasn't going to win, Mulroney wouldn't have called the election for November 21st, I understand it is. You follow that?
Yeah, I understand. It's the 21st.
Mm. So that will just be a reverberation of the George Bush victory, and we're going to have a lot of trouble in Kansas that only will be comforted by the suggestions I will offer during that period of pain, which is predicted in the prophecies, in the countdown to captivity that I laid out, which Stang ripped off and put in his book. That schedule will be forthcoming, but it will not be exactly as laid out in the book, and therefore you have to follow my instructions. So, Mike, I hope you have a secure habitat, a shelter, and are ready to take on the task of staying in Toronto and airing this work.
Well,
do we have another question? questions?
No, we don't have any more questions. I think I should wrap things up, and we should finish perhaps on a more positive note by reminding our listeners and you, of course, that next week is fundraising, and you'll be back next Wednesday.
Yeah, I think that fundraising is always a time of celebration, a time of the community at CKLN and around CKLN to express their acknowledgement of the work of Bob and what Bob has done and the value of CKLN for allowing Bob to express his program through that medium. So Connie looks forward to CKLN's fundraising. Jerry looks forward to it. Frank looks forward to it. And I guess I have to admit, I'm almost looking forward to it. Though I have so many other pressing matters that I hope I can put a lot of concentration into it when the task is demanded of me next Wednesday.
I hope so. I hope so too, Bob. You know, you sound a little despondent these days.
Beg your pardon?
You're sounding a little despondent.
Yes. You have or I have?
Well, I guess me too.
Not a pleasant task that I have before me, especially with unpredictable things like the death of close associates. So I just hope that fundraising keeps our spirits up.
Oh.
So I call on all the subjects out there to be listening next week and to make your acknowledgement of our work by any kind of interaction with the week of fundraising.
Okay, Bob, I think we'll wrap things up. I want to just remind listeners that I've still got the address that you gave me and that you'll be calling back next week.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Okay, Bob, thanks. Bye.
Goodbye.
Second Sunday morning at 10 on 88.1 CKLN.
And sometimes it's good to go over the old glossary every so often. And he brought up the question of pinkness, which, you know, again, we may neglect from time to time.
That's so right. No, it's very important.
How did that work out okay with you for the connection?
I can hear him perfect, yeah. Yes.
Good. Well, look, it's quarter to one.
Oh.
The phone's ringing again. Do you want to take just one more call, and then we'll wrap it up?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, gosh, it is Christmas after all.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, Mike, you got nothing to play after this.
No,
I am the greatest cassette. I am the greatest cassette.
The usual tapes.
I'm the greatest cassette.
Hi, CKLN.
Hi, this is really international. This is the Church of George calling the Church of God. This is a new thing for me. I was just wondering, like, if you could tell me some more about your molecules and stuff.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Saturn right now.
And you're the Church of George?
Yeah.
Well,
that connection's very good.
Well, that's not a bad name to have because, as you know...
It's my name. It's
really your name?
Yeah, it's my name.
Okay, well, the thing is that... what's his name? Prince had an album out last year called Black that was banned. All right? You know?
Yeah, really. Why?
Because there was a song on it called, I think it was called Bob Is Bitchin', but it was about Bob George. And
yeah,
so,
see?
What?
Yeah, C.
Yeah, it's Bob George is the main theme of that song, and I'd just like to extend my congratulations to my long-lost twin brother who just found me.
Really?
Yeah, you are my twin brother.
Like mine was. Wow.
This is exciting.
I didn't think you were my twin, though. That's why I called.
No, no, I'm always mutating. I mean, yeah. I don't look like I do in the book at all. I change all the time.
See, if you had been my twin, I wouldn't have called.
Yeah, I think it's very important that we meet here.
Yeah, I had to find out because it was different, right?
No, certainly.
Otherwise, it would have been the same world, and I already would have just known about it and stuff.
That's right. We don't believe in oneness. We believe in two-ness. And Bob and George is what it's about. So, George, definitely call 657-8040, and we'll get together and, you know, do some private things together because, I haven't seen you in a long time.
I haven't seen you ever. It's great.
But you know me.
I know you. Okay, so, we'll get together, right?
No problem, George.
Okay.
Glad to have you back. I've missed you about five reincarnations back, way back there about Camelot, right?
All right. See you, Becky.
Thanks for calling, George.
Uh-huh.
Bye. Okay, wow. So, George, that's exciting. Is that not a Christmassy event? Reuniting with your long-lost brother,
George. Twin brother. Lost and found, my God.
Have we talked about your parents before, haven't we? Haven't we talked about Bob's parents?
No. Have we? I don't want to go into that.
All right, let's not talk about it. Bob, great show again.
Yeah.
Good energy,
Yeah, good sharing.
Yeah. Maybe we should come back and do this again next week, because it is so close to Christmas and all.
Oh, you mean I should come down again?
Aye, what do you think?
Yeah. If you want me, I mean, I know you can't have Christmas without me.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Nimrod's birthday, and it just seems a bit too far away.
Well, okay, any last thoughts?
I'm glad I didn't finish explaining why I'm greater than Karen Kane. Just tune in. Next week I will finish the explanation of why I'm the greatest ballet dancer today and how tactility is expressed through Bob. It's a complicated expression, but I'm way beyond Canada Council grants. I don't need grants.
Yeah. So next week will be our true Christmas show then.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, listen, you're going to be around for a while. So if you want to call and rap with Bob.
Yeah,
and
continue.
Get sexy.
Yeah, 595-1478 or 1478.
Yeah, 1478. The other line to call. And we'll just continue with the usual slew of boring music and stuff like that.
Well, my theme song. You got my theme song then?
I've got the theme song, yeah. We'll go with the theme song and then we'll play International Connection.
Yeah.
Okay, so, talk about sexy. Let's get really sexy.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
They can't maintain the linearity. They can't be down to radio.
I can't stop the other under other conditions.